three decades in the music business have taught former Black Crowes drummer Steve Gorman a lot about unhealthy environments. In his new book, Hard to Handle, The Life and Death of the Black Crowes, the former Western Kentucky University student details the group's meteoric rise and crushing downfall. Ahead of this weekend's show at the Southern Kentucky Performing Arts Center, Gorman joined me to discuss his new band, Trigger Hippie, and its sophomore album, Full Circle, and then some. You know I just got back and put myself on the map,
and it's time that I made you mine. It was a blast to make. We were not working with any, it's our album. We made it according to our own schedule, and when we felt we had a song that was worth recording, we would all get together and go knock it out. You know, it was a very stress-free process.
To contrast, Gorman says his last band never had a solid foundation.
We were all kids when we started that band, and with literally next to zero life experience and certainly no experience about being a musician in a working environment, we were kids with a dream. And that's a great way to start a band. It's not a great way to maintain a band. And a lot of the Black Crowes difficulties and dysfunction stemmed from us never really maturing and evolving and being able to communicate the fact that we saw things differently as we aged. You know, we tried to maintain, it's like we wanted to keep this genie in the bottle to everyone's great detriment. Trigger Hippie started with everybody that's in Trigger Hippie, and for Nick Govrick and I, who started the band and were the ones that started making phone calls to get people to jam with us. You know, we were in our 40s and we'd already had a lot of experiences, both of us. And there's just so many things you do as a younger musician that you accept and say, well, this is no big deal. It's okay in the grand scheme of things. That as an older, more seasoned veteran, if you will, you can see red flags and you just steer away from them. All of which to say, Trigger Hippie is basically built on a foundation of respect. And the Black Crowes, you know, only because we were too young and didn't know better, that was hardly something we considered. We just wanted something and we were willing to do anything it took to get there. That's not how Trigger Hippie's built or based or operates on any level.
How does being in a respectful environment really affect the creative process and help that blossom for you?
Well, everybody feels comfortable bringing forth any idea. You know, it's not a, no one questions their own instinct. I mean, in a band like the Black Crowes, there were, and this is true of a lot of rock bands, and specifically, like I said, a lot of rock bands that start when everybody's really young. You establish a culture early on, and it's next to impossible to change it and to allow the individual members inside that bubble to grow and evolve and be comfortable doing that. You know, one of the big things in the book I wrote about the band, it's pretty clear to me anyway, the Black Crowes never exploded. It eroded. You know, the band slowly tore itself apart over years, and it's a question of, on a daily basis, everybody having a little bit less confidence in their opinion, a little bit less respect for each other, a little less joy and appreciation for how good we had it being a successful band. Those sort of things can, you know, it's really difficult to keep a band together when everybody's on the same page. It's very difficult. The Black Crowes never knew how hard that was because we were so rarely on the same page. We were all focused on trying to accomplish things, but we all had very different goals and very different motivations. And really, it's funny, again, going back to the whole starting a band when you're young versus old, there's a set of values that everybody needs to share. Very deep down, what is it you're actually hoping to accomplish? What do you want to do, and how do you go about it? And what are your true values? That's not the kind of thing a bunch of kids in their teens and early 20s sit around and talk about. It's a very common conversation and a healthy conversation for people in their 40s to discuss. If I was someone else, there'd be a chance I could have kept you. But you don't want to hear
it anymore. Gorman knew he was officially done with the band after he says frontman Chris Robinson tried to renegotiate his share of the pay ahead of a 2015 reunion tour.
We were the three founding members, and he decided after 27 years to change the way the money flowed. And it was just a bizarre, absurd list of demands that were non-negotiable. So, I mean, as far as as far as my involvement with the Black Crowes, I knew the day I got that email that I was done, that I would never willingly be in a room with him again. It's real simple. But the band at its greatest, there was a band in the 90s called the Black Crowes that was a true band that did have an incredible essence and was a top shelf band, an all-time great rock and roll band. And that band went away in the summer of 97 and never really found itself again. But that said, we didn't stop trying for a long time. But there was sort of the death of the band at its greatest, and then there was just the band that continued trying to find its way again for a long time.
Was there a specific low point when you realized this can't continue?
Well, I knew it couldn't continue. I definitely knew in the summer of 97, we had two members leave the band and within a space of a week. And I knew it was over and I wanted to leave. I felt 100% like it's time to go, but I wasn't in a place to do that. I didn't have a plan. I didn't have a backup plan. I couldn't even imagine what I would do. And thankfully I did realize that, and I did admit to myself, well, that just says I've been wasting my time. Like I've put way too much of myself into this without taking care of myself. And so I knew I needed to stay until I was on more solid ground and until I had a little bit of a clearer view of things. And then 2 years later, I was ready to go. And in fact, I did call our manager to quit the band in the summer of 99. And he responded with, I just hung up with Jimmy Page's manager and he wants to go on tour with us. And so I was like, well, maybe I'll wait a little bit. And there are countless examples of that where you feel like it's time to change course, and something, there's always a carrot across the room that's just too good to turn down. And then ultimately, you know, 2 years after that phone call at the end of 2001, I did leave the band. And I did think that would be permanent. You know, the band was going away and I said, well, I'm not coming back. I'm done. And then as things go, you know, everybody grows up and gets away from each other for a few years and at least gives lip service to having learned and grown up. And then we started the band up again. And within a few years, it was pretty obvious it was the same old story. And then my goal shifted to just getting out in a good place and sort of preserving the legacy and finishing on a high note. I wanted the band to go away. And we had a tour plan for 2015 that was going to be the farewell tour. And I was very excited about that because I thought we could finally do something right. And we could walk out with our heads held high and shake hands. And then that became impossible to do. And so then that's when when Chris demanded a new business setup, that's when I was like, okay, this is done. It was already done. It just happened a year before I wish it had, but time to move on.
Now, Gorman's in a better spot, playing with a new, healthier band and hosting a syndicated radio show out of Nashville, an hour south of where he went to school at WKU.
You know, the first time I ever played a drum kit, like to learn songs with other guys playing instruments, was in Bowling Green. Like it was at a house just off campus in the fall of 83. I borrowed a drum kit from a friend, and me and a bass player and a guitar player just started making noise, and I didn't know what I was doing. Thankfully, I was with guys who did, and I could fake. I faked it really well, like I knew what I was doing. And then, you know, that happened for a few years in Bowling Green. I would just, you know, sit around with friends, and every time I played a drum kit, it could be for an hour or 10 minutes, and I would always finish and think, "Man, this is what I want to do." Like I'm, you know, I had a very, very burning desire. I could never turn it off, and so, you know, I was a broadcasting major, and I was, you know, got through 3 years of school, and the whole time it was like I was wearing this mask of college student, because all I wanted to do was actually buy a drum kit and make a commitment to play in a band with some friends. And when I finally got that opportunity, it turned out it was in Atlanta, but I didn't hesitate. I just said, yeah, let's do this. Let's give it a shot. So, you know, to say that Bowling Green factors into my musical development is an understatement. I mean, because that's literally where I started playing drums.
So what does it mean for you then to be able to take your new project when you're in a healthier spot, having all this experience you've had going around the world, and taking it back to somewhere familiar, somewhere like Skypack out here in Bowling Green?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, I'm thrilled that we're up there playing in Bowling Green. You know, I'm in Bowling Green several times a year as it is. I go up for just to see family or go to a Western game or whatever the reason may be. So, but to bring my band up there, you know, the Black Crowes never played in Bowling Green. Trigger Hippie played there in 2015, one time before, but I'm very excited about this show because I, you know, this is the band that Trigger Hippie's been trying to be.
All right. Well, I appreciate your time today. Thank you again. And we're looking forward to your show on Saturday.
Yeah. Thank you very much, man. I appreciate it.
For WKU Public Radio, I'm Colin Jackson.